WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We just finished our conversation about Gwendolyn Brooks, the first Black author to win a Pulitzer Prize. And now we're continuing our conversation about Black women who broke glass ceilings with Lorraine Hansberry. When her play, A Raisin in the Sun, first opened at the Barrymore Theater on March 11, 1959, she became the first Black woman to have a play on Broadway. Hansberry was the subject of our full bio series. That's when we break down a thoroughly researched biography over the course of the week. We spoke with Georgetown professor Suika Colbert about her book, A Radical Vision, A Biography of Lorraine Hansberry. In this installment of the conversation, we focus specifically about her historic achievement. I asked Professor Colbert what was going on in Lorraine Hansberry's life around the time she wrote A Raisin in the Sun.
Hansberry had turned to being a full-time writer by that point. Her husband, Robert Nimroff, had sold a song called Cindy O' Cindy that had gotten them a small windfall that enabled her to turn to being a full-time, to work on this play and being a full-time writer. And so she was no longer working odd jobs and writing for periodicals. And so she, as I said, she started developing A Raisin in the Sun in 1957, and it took until 1959 for it to be produced, but she was working on it steadily over those 2 years.
Before Lorraine Hansberry, no Black woman playwright had ever been produced on Broadway before. How did this play make it to the stage?
It was a set of unexpected events. So Robert Nimroff and Hansberry were friends with a man named Phil Rose and Bert DeLaGoff, who ended up being the producers for the play. But both Bert and Phil Rose were friends of the Hansberries. And so they invited, Bob and Lorraine invited Bert and Phil over for dinner. They read them a version of Raisin. And, you know, the short story is that they heard the play, they wanted to produce it, and they basically, naively, as young adults, just said they were going to do it. At the time, Hansberry was 27 years old. And so they began to try to raise money from their friends to produce this play. And at the time, Phil Rose knew Sidney Poitier, who was a burgeoning star, and got him, Sidney Poitier, to sign on to the play. And that also lended it some credence and some excitement. And I guess one of the final pieces in terms of getting some momentum behind the production of the play was getting a young Lloyd Richards to sign on as director. And so Richards would go on to direct many of August Wilson's plays on Broadway's decades later. But at this time, he was, you know, a virtually unknown director and, of course, goes on to have a very auspicious career. And so, you know, the producers are able to get the play and tryouts in Chicago. The play is seen to rave reviews in Chicago, which then make it possible for it to be picked up and placed on Broadway. But again, if the play had not been successful in Chicago, we probably never would have seen it in New York. And so it really is a story that there are so many moments where things could have gone differently. It's almost miraculous that it ends up at the Ethel Barrymore Theater, given the inexperience of the producers and, you know, the hit or miss possibility of the critics in Chicago loving the play.
How was A Raisin in the Sun part of Hansberry's radical vision?
So, you know, on its face, A Raisin in the Sun is a story about a family who wants to live the American dream. And that's part of why, you know, this many years later, we still love the play, and it's taught more than almost any other play in, you know, U.S. high schools, because it's a story about the American dream on its face. But I think that what may be overlooked is, you know, there is a story about Black internationalism in the play, in the relationship between Benita and Assagai. Benita is the daughter in the play, and she has a suitor who is a international student named Assagai. And through their relationship, we hear about Black independence movements that are happening. Again, this is well before the Black Power movement. And Hansberry is asking us to think about what Black independence movements in Africa have to do with what's happening in the U.S. We hear about, you know, integration and the bombing of neighborhoods because folks are trying to integrate. I will note that in the Broadway production of the play, the conversation around bombing neighborhoods is cut. And so the audiences in 1959 would have not have heard that part, but it is currently, you know, in the full versions of the play. But you also see, you know, the burgeoning feminism of Benita, who says she doesn't want to be anybody's wife. She wants to make herself, which is a radical thing to say for a young Black woman in 1959. And, you know, Hansberry in interviews after the play talks about how, you know, Benita is her a few years ago. You know, Benita is a younger version of herself, and how much Hansberry resonates with that point of view.
Our full biopic this month is Radical Vision, a biography of Lorraine Hansberry. I'm speaking with Sowika Colbert. It's interesting. Audiences have debated the end of the play, and I understand the ending of the Broadway version, where the family decides to move into the white neighborhood, is different than an earlier version, which showed the family deciding to move into the home, but they're sort of armed and waiting for violence. Why do you think this ending has debated over time, this ending about integration versus assimilation?
I think that people miss the point, or miss some of the point of the ending of the play. One of the things that Hansberry believed is that change over time occurred through people asserting themselves, making decisions, and moving forward. And so it wasn't necessarily tied to the outcome of what happened, but it was about asserting oneself. And so Carl Augustus Hansberry, Lorraine Hansberry's father, chose to file a lawsuit that went to the Supreme Court. Even though he didn't get the outcome that he wanted, his ability to insert himself in history was the affirmative act, was the revolutionary act. And so similarly, Hansberry saw the younger's choice to move as the affirmative act. And so even though we know that historically there was great violence that came from those type of decisions, Hansberry experienced it herself when she moved to desegregate a neighborhood as a child. Even though we know that to be the historical outcome, the point was not whether or not they, the youngers would face that when they moved, but rather their ability to choose was part of how you laid the foundation for freedom movements, having those day-to-day choices by everyday people asserting themselves in history.
I'm curious, as you were researching the book and reading the reviews of this play at that time, did you find anything particularly interesting about the response of the critics? Was there anything that stood out to you aside from people really finding the play to be excellent? I have to imagine there must have been some interesting, and I, you know what I mean by interesting.
You get a sense of how different the times were. And again, you know, how startling it is that Hansberry was the figure, was the, became the person that she became. So there's an interview with Mike Wallace,
who was, oh my God.
who was just cutting his teeth as a journalist at the time. And he begins by saying that Hansberry is a housewife that wrote a play. And so, first of all, Hansberry had been writing for 9 years before she wrote Raising the Sun in public periodicals. And, you know, although she was married, she was certainly more than a young housewife who wrote a play. And so I think that, again, you know, in our current moment with Google and Twitter, a journalist would have known that Hansberry had been writing for these leftist periodicals and these radical periodicals. But at that time, you didn't have search engines. And so all Wallace knows is that she wrote this play that's on Broadway and that she was, you know, a young married woman. And that is the public, that is a an image of her that carries until the end of her life. And so similarly, people apprehend her as being young and sort of, you know, not young ingenue.
Actually, I'd love to play a clip of part of that interview with Mike Wallace.
Is it fair to say that even in proportion. Very few Negroes have distinguished themselves as playwrights, novelists, and poets. There have been a few, including yourself, but not many. How come?
Oh, to whether they've distinguished themselves is kind of difficult to discuss because we always have to keep in mind the circumstances and the framework that Negroes do anything in America, which, of course, is a hostile circumstance. We've been writing poetry since, you know, the 17th century in this country and publishing. Been writing plays that simply never see the light of day because the circumstances, I say, is hostile.
But that the same is not true in the case of Negro athletes, Negro entertainers.
Yes, well,
I think in proportion there are more of them who become hugely successful.
Yes, of course, because one of the features of American racism is that it has a particular place where it allows Negroes to express themselves. We're not very warm to the idea of Negro intellectual exploration of any kind in this country. We presume, or at least the racists do, not me, that it's all right to display physical or musical or other features like that, but don't go writing and don't go trying to suggest that anything cerebral is within our sphere, you see.
Lorraine Hansberry is a smart woman. Did she see interviews like the one with Wallace as useful? Was she able to use this image to her advantage in any way?
Hansberry loved to debate. I often say if she was alive today, she'd be active on Twitter because she loved a good debate. And I think that part of what she understood is that in conversation, we have the potential of transforming people's opinion and having people see things differently. And so although she often left those interviews frustrated, she also saw them as an opportunity to politicize people. And so I think every time she came into contact with people misapprehending her, she tried to enable them to see her differently because she saw that as the basis for building coalitions and part of her political work.
She was quite beautiful. What impact did that have as she gained fame?
I think that people, again, you know, misunderstood her because they saw her as this young, beautiful woman who wrote, as I said, a very comfortable play if you're just reading it on its surface. And Hansberry actually often struggled with her physical appearance, her perception of her physical appearance. She, was very much ambivalent about how she was perceived in the world. She was at times very brooding and at other times very outgoing. And you see this some in her journal entries. And so although she's perceived as this, and she was this young, beautiful starlet, she also did not always see herself in that way. And I think that informs some of the interior vision you see of her in her journal entries, and I would say, which is more well known, in some of the lists that she kept of herself, which she called "myself in notes," where she lists the things that she likes and dislikes about herself. Some of that comes out in those lists. Some of that tension.
I'm curious, when you teach this play, when you teach about Hansberry and this play, I'm curious what a current student, college student, a smart, progressive college student thinks. What kind of questions do they ask you?
You know, the students today are curious about why Hansberry's sexuality doesn't come out in the play, because most people know now that she was queer, or what we would call queer today. They still are, even now, the students still debate whether or not the younger should move. And, you know, the students are also less sympathetic, I think, to Walter Lee than folks may have been during his time period. But again, in the Mike Wallace interview, this also comes up about Wallace's questioning Hansberry's presentation of Walter Lee, and, you know, whether or not he's problematic. And I think that some of the work that Walter Lee does and some of the radicalism that comes out in terms of Walter Lee is, again, Hansberry suggesting that all Black folks from working class chauffeurs who might be patriarchal to more radical, you know, young feminists must play a part in Black freedom movements. And so Walter Lee's evolution of his thinking over time in the play is a function of that. And it's important then that Walter Lee is the one who makes the decision, I think, to move by the end of the play. I think the other thing that I would say is that, you know, Hansberry comes off in her speeches as being very serious and an intellectual, which she was. But she was also a young 20-something living in New York who was filled with insecurity and fear. And so when I teach her work to my students, I also emphasize that Hansberry has taught me that you can still be bold even if you are afraid. And so one example I give is that Hansberry was deathly afraid of hospitals, but she spent so much of the last years of her life in hospitals. She was afraid of elevators. And so when she would meet people, she would insist that they walk up the stairs, and people thought it was just because she was, you know, full of energy, but it was because she was afraid. And so you would never register that part of her personality from listening to her on recordings. But I think it's instructive to us that, you know, to be a outspoken intellectual does not mean that you don't have your own struggle, internal struggles. And I think that that's part of what makes her even more inspiring.
That was part of my conversation with Professor Suika Colbert, author of Radical Vision, her biography on the life and work of Lorraine Hansberry that was released last year. We spoke to Professor Colbert as part of our full bio series, which you can listen online at WNYC.org.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.